Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What?
El Hombre.
That was a catastrophe.
I know.
That's a new low. Yeah. Roz is better.
El Hombre.
The natural meets Rudy meets... I don't even know how to describe it.
El Hombre.
It is that time, everybody, every Tuesday at 5 o'clock, barring preemption. We bring in this man, the one, the only, El Hombre. Michael Bradley joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. How are you, sir?
How's everybody doing tonight?
Fired.
This afternoon, sorry.
Fired up. Fired up that the spring training is done. Mariners played their final spring training game today, opening day for the Mariners on Thursday. I was contemplating a 162-0 sign, but I thought that would probably have been done before by somebody, so I'm not going to do that. But, yeah.
We're sitting here anticipating rain. They may push the game off a day. I don't know if I can handle it.
Do you have season tickets, or do you buy a package, or what?
So I'm part of a group that buys the whole season. Now, we sell a bunch off, but we end up with all the tickets, and that allows us to get playoff tickets, too, which is something that's been going on in this town the last couple of years.
So how many stop bragging. So how many games do you think you go to a year?
About 10.
Okay. All right. I never asked you that before. I was curious. Just curious,
Yeah, hey. It's fun to go to the games. We have great seats. We're 11 rows behind the Phillies dugout right on the aisle. So, last year they brought up one of those call-up umpires because one of the varsity was on vacation, and he was rotten. And he could hear me when I yelled, hey, because they have their numbers on the sleeve, hey, 147, you'll be back in Pawtucket tomorrow. He turned and looked at me. He had the rabbit ears. It was great.
What did he stare you down or what? What did he give you? The stink eye?
He just gave me a quick look, like, who said that? He gave me the stink eye. He didn't give me a stare down because I would have just stood up and been like, tell me I'm wrong.
Mike would have been, you want some of this?
Remember on Seinfeld, it's like, yeah, there's the crook eye. There's the stink eye, the crook eye, and the evil eye. You got the crook eye.
There you go.
I got the stink eye.
I got the stink eye.
So what's your feeling about this whole Shohei Ohtani thing that's going on? It's people have already come to some conclusion in certain aspects. Oh, he's lying. It was him that was gambling, and I don't know how anybody would know that. I did read a story that some of his teammates from the Angels said this guy doesn't follow any other sports. He the idea that he would bet on anything seems a little outlandish, but maybe he did. I don't know. What's your feeling about this whole thing?
It just the thing about it is, how did this guy get the ability to get $4.5 million from
him? Yeah.
Also, if it really was gambling debts, where did he find a bookie who was willing to extend him that kind of credit? This isn't a billionaire where $4.5 million is, a rounding error. This is a guy who maybe was making $400,000 or $500,000 a year, and he was $4.5 million in debt. That's what doesn't add up to me. The other thing is the story changed. First, he was Ohtani was sending money to pay off this guy's gambling debt, and then he was being stolen from.
Yeah.
So what was it? It's just the problem is there's too many questions that don't make any sense. And, I don't really think baseball is going to go after this all that hard because they know what happens if it turns out that Ohtani was gambling. They have to ban him for life because of the Pete Rose precedent. So I don't know if we'll ever really get the full answer.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think I don't know, my mind always goes to the diabolical where, he's actually the one gambling, and then, he pays it off and then sets that guy up for life somehow through some kind of a bank number, routing number, whatever. I don't know. I know that he's a super nice guy, but I think you're right. MLB's not going to let that happen, and then I don't know, it stinks. There's something about it that smells to me that I feel like it was Ohtani and now he's going to, have to take care of this guy.
Yeah, and the other thing about it is that you've got a situation where some strange stuff's come out about Ohtani. All of a sudden he's married. Surprise, right? And how about that contract? It's never happened before.
What, him deferring the money?
Yeah. Was that done for a reason? I mean, did he want to kind of shelter some money or protect himself? I don't know. All I know is that this is a very, very strange situation with his translator. And it's a strange situation with some of the stuff that's been happening with him of late. And I don't, and as I said earlier, I don't know what happened. The only thing I'm saying is the story's changed. It's gotten crazy. And I don't think we, you know, I don't think we'll ever find really hear the full story. I hope we do, but I don't think we ever will.
I don't know. I get what you're saying about the motivation of Major League Baseball not working that hard to find the truth or potentially covering up the truth if, in fact, he's guilty of something. But I, in this day and age where everything gets out, everything gets out, I just don't know that they would risk that. Maybe they would. I don't know. But the idea that they would knowingly cover up, okay, we know he was gambling, but we can't. He's a unicorn. We can't. He's too important to the game.
There's going to be a trail, right?
There's too many people involved for it to remain a secret.
Agreed.
So
you're right, but that's what we say about every cover up until we find out that the cover up is real.
But you find out about it. That's the point.
Yeah, I know. I mean, look, the forensic. I hope we get some forensic accounting done on this because that level of a wire transfer is not easy to get done. Right. Right? You need to have somebody. It has to go through various layers.
Yeah.
You can't just say, okay, I'm going to steal $500,000 of this guy's money because I got his checkbook or I've got his bank account number, and then have everybody say, oh, okay, no problem, sir. Here you go. Here's your $500,000 of Mr. Ohtani's money.
Yeah, you know, it's funny.
That's the other thing.
In the NFL, there was a much lesser number, but a guy was gambling, and I'm like, don't you know a guy that knows a guy? Why don't you just do that and deal in cash rather than like try to leave some kind of paper, you know, leaving some kind of electronic footprint or paper trail or whatever. But yeah, it just seems to me the guys that the way that they're doing it, it's just so dumb to think that that's nobody's going to find out about that, especially when you're talking about the numbers that that are involved with this one.
Yeah, now, I mean, look, it'll be easily Ohtani's innocence can be easily proven if it's clear that the wire transfers were done by this guy without Ohtani signing off on anything. But if he's signing off on it, all of a sudden the story about him being stolen from goes out the window, and now it's, okay, what's going on?
Yeah.
Because the original story of I was paying off his gambling debts doesn't really, you know, that doesn't really jive with I was this is guy's a thief. And we don't, you know, this guy's gone. He's in the wind right now.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting.
Is he going to press charges?
Well, and that's the other part. This isn't, you know, this guy was shoplifting a soda pop here. You know, this $4.5 million, and if he in fact was stealing from him, the guy's going to jail. I mean, that's $4.5 million. You know, so this isn't a little misdemeanor. Yeah. So I don't know that he's so willing.
There's a lot that still has to come out, I think.
Yeah, if he's accusing this guy, he's saying, hey, this guy lied to me. This guy stole from me, which immediately makes this guy a criminal and set to do some time if it's proven. Is anybody going to take that kind of fall for him? Even if he says, hey, man, you got to take the rap for this one and I'm going to set you up for life. You're going to serve some time in prison. But, you know, I got you hooked up after that. Who's going to agree to that?
Right, and that, well, who the guy who agreed to that, the guy who supplied Balco Bonds with his steroids, Anderson, he did time to protect Bonds. So, you know, it's been done before. We've seen a lot of guys driving around in cars with guns and weed, and all of a sudden, it's my cousins, and there's a cousin sitting there going, hey, it's mine.
Yeah. Hey, one other big story that came out, we talked to Tim Brando about this yesterday, and that is Kim Mulkey, the head coach of LSU, the women's team, is you know, came out and made a big stink about a story that hadn't yet to become public, and you know, everybody was looking at her preemptive strike as something of an indictment on what was about to come out, or, you know, she it didn't go well. It was poorly received is what I'll say about that. But I'm curious how closely you followed this and what it is. What's your read on this whole situation?
Everybody in the media should be disgusted by her behavior. If you are siding with her, you are a shill or you're not really a media member. And here's why I say that. She's following the playbook that we've heard politicians, other coaches, athletes, and other people do by saying, this reporter is sleazy. It's a hit job. I've retained attorneys.
Yeah.
This isn't some some fly-by-night website. This is the Washington Post. I don't care what your politics are. Their credentials are unindictable. Have you ever heard of Watergate? So, I mean, there's probably still some Nixon supporters out there salty about the fact that old Tricky Dick had to leave office. But the Washington Post is unindictable, and there's no possible way that they're going to do anything that's going to endanger that newspaper. So whatever comes out is going to be 100% vetted, researched, and accurate. And the guy who's doing it is one of the most respected reporters in the country. So here's Tim Mulkey trying to get people to say, oh, the mean Washington Post is coming after little old me and my feathers. She is somebody who needs to be looked at. And this has been going on for 2 years. This has been investigated for a while. She's had opportunities to speak, and she said no. And then she tries to play the old, well, then they sent us a bunch of questions right before we were going to play an NCAA tournament. It's not fair. Yeah, it's fair. You could have talked to this guy any time in the last 2 years, and you didn't, because you didn't think it was something you had to worry about. Well, now you do. And she's saying, we're talking to disgruntled former players. Well, how many of them are there? Think they're going to talk to Brittany Griner about this? You think Kim Mulkey tried to lift a finger to get her out of a Russian prison? Never heard her come forward and talk about her former player. Heard a lot of other people do it. So I'm sick of this crap of people who are in power trying to make it out to be the media's fault when they're held to task, brought to task. And she's going to be. And I can't wait to read this. And by the way, her little diatribe, 1 minute and 32 second diatribe, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's made people want to see this even more.
Yeah.
It was dumb by her.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know about it until she opened her big mouth. And now she's going to pay because everybody wants to see it. And it's going to be talked about. And she's going to lose some of that little Southern charm that she has. And her ability to be the overlord of LSU women's basketball.
Hey, Michael, you look at the NCAA tournament, all the ones, all the twos, your two like big underdogs remaining in the Sweet 16 are a 6 seed, which is Clemson, and 11 is NC State. Is it a little bit more boring? I mean, the games, I think, have been pretty good, but what's your overall, how much is this blowing your skirt up is my question.
We'll always have Yale.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, look, we got a couple of upsets, right? We had North Carolina State won. We had Yale win. We had some nines over eights. We had the Grand Canyon win, right?
Yeah.
We had James Madison win. So we got some of that. Now we're going to pick a champion. And I'd much rather have a regional semifinal game between a 1 and a 4 than between an 8 and a 13 or whatever it adds up to be.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it. Wouldn't it be great if we had four regional finals with 1 versus 2s? That would be a lot of fun as far as I'm concerned, because what it would do is it would give us the best basketball teams playing, not just a team that's gotten hot now. You know, let's go back to Florida Atlantic. Nothing against the Owls, and their coach just became the head coach at the large school in Ann Arbor, so I'm happy to see what Dusty May's going to do. But, you know, once they won their first-round game, they got to play Fairly Ridiculous, and that was a pretty nice deal for them. And then the rest of the bracket was torn to shreds. So I'm happy to see this. I picked Kentucky to win it all, idiot. So that's in the hopper.
But idiot.
I get to sit back now, and I went on TV in Philadelphia and gave that out. And then the next weekend I showed up. You'd be happy. I dressed all in black. I was in mourning for my pick. I told my wife, "You better watch tonight, because the next year they may just have a chimpanzee do it instead of me. They'd probably do better."
They were your champs, huh? Kentucky. I had them going to the Sweet 16, so I got burned by them a bit, but I didn't have them going as far as you did, clearly.
Oh, yeah, I was the guy sitting pouring a gasoline on himself and lighting himself on fire. You got a little singed.
Well, what? I mean, do you put this on Calipari? Were they ill-prepared? What do you see as the biggest reason that they flopped?
Well, first of all, the guy shot 10 of 20 from three-point line. The guy is going to be an accountant someday. The other thing was they threw a matchup zone at Cal. And being in Philadelphia here, I remember when John Chaney used to torment his UMass teams with his matchup zone. You watch that game, those Kentucky players were throwing cross-court passes against the zone. That doesn't work too well. Jay Wright said it best, and he's friends with Cal. He said, look, the days of having 18-year-olds, no matter how talented they are, and 19-year-olds going up against 23 and 24-year-old guys who are very talented and who are, you know, sticking around for the fourth and fifth years to catch the NIL train. Those days are the 18-year-olds winning are over. You have to have experience. And take a look at the teams. Purdue, Zach Edey's like 28, right? Houston's team is loaded with experienced guys. Kelvin Sampson keeps those guys around. North Carolina, Armando Bacot, I think this is his ninth year somehow, right? You've got veteran players, and they're good, and they're staying. And I think the one thing NIL is going to do is it's going to stop kids who need the money from leaving after their freshman or sophomore years when they shouldn't, and they'll stick around and play. So it'll be interesting to see Cal. He's got a pretty good recruiting class coming in, but he's probably going to dip into the portal and find himself two or three veterans, including maybe a point guard, who he can say, listen, let's get a little experience in here to go with all the five stars.
Hey, Michael, I know that we have complained about this probably before, but this hip drop tackle thing, every day it gets more ridiculous to me.
I thought of you when the rule was passed.
Well, we just heard from, I think it was Ian Rappaport, and this is the most ridiculous thing because it's exactly what my point would be. Somebody asked, you know, what should we do? And he was very proud of this, that I think it was the head of the rules committee points to it and goes, not that. So you're still not telling players what to do. You know, they're not being taught. They're not being coached how to, and I haven't heard anything about that part of it. And that's what I want to know. I want to know, how do you coach him out of this? So that's kind of where the outrage is. I mean, I think it'll be interesting, and I think it'll be something to, like I always talk about, I like complaining about umpires, you know, the balls and strikes.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, it's part
Absolutely.
Of it, man. Yeah, so, I mean, I think the penalties in the NFL, especially the ridiculous ones, but I don't know, that one really caught me as like, it's like a debate in second grade. I mean, it's the ridiculousness of that comment really caught me.
Well, I'll tell you what. Derrick Henry's going to run for 3,000 yards. If I am he, I'm adding 20 pounds.
3,000?
I'm coming in 270. And I'm saying, who's going to tackle me? You're not allowed to use the hip drop. You're not allowed to use the horse collar. You're not allowed to hit me here. You're not allowed to hit me there. Yeah. It's going to take – you're going to need a cannon to stop him. So, running backs, I'd start putting offensive tackles in the backfield, giving them the ball. How are you going to bring them down?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Michael, and I've noticed this over the last couple, 3 years, when a quarterback scrambles, just go watch the defenders. They, like, panic. They don't know what to do.
Oh, yeah.
They become, like, different football players all of a sudden, because it's like, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to tackle this guy? Where do I hit him? Where don't I hit him? So, yeah, I feel like for defenders especially, and there's a lot of guys out there that are saying they think that it's the right thing to do. I guess it's kind of, we'll see if it's an experimental thing, maybe just lasts a year, but I'm still curious what to do. Don't tell me what
not to
do.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you tackle. The rugby tackle, does that work? Can you do that, or is that a variation on the hip drop tackle?
Well,
Yeah,
I was going to say rugby, just, you know, wrapping them up legs from behind. I mean, that's part of what they don't want. They don't want you falling on their legs. So I just.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, what do you do now? You go back to the days of when you were playing in sixth grade, where you ran at the guy, you put your shoulder on him, and then you put your arms around him, head up, you know, the perfect form tackle that you were taught when you were a kid. Yeah, you can do that, except when the guy's flying at you or he's, you know, outweighs you by 60 pounds. I have no idea where we're going to go with this. And look, rules are ridiculous in all of these sports. The NBA, finally, Adam Silver said, we're going to have to do something where, you know, we're going to have to let them play defense now, because people are getting sick of 140 to 138 games. Why would you watch a first, second, or third quarter of any NBA game where it's just guys coming down and jacking up 35-footers, and if somebody touches you or breathes on you, it's a foul? How about Major League Baseball? You're not allowed to block the second base anymore. When a guy's sliding in, you go to take the throw from the catcher and your knee's a little bit in front of the base, and the guy's safe even if he's out by 6 feet. It's very difficult for fans now to figure out what the heck they're watching, because the rules are getting so ridiculous. I mean, how about that new kickoff? Did anybody explain what they're going to do for an onside kick? Are onside kicks done?
Well,
we need onside kicks.
I think they can still do it. They can't overload. I agree with you, and I think it should go back to the overload thing because it doesn't happen that often, and it's a big play, and it's how the Seahawks got in the Super Bowl a few years ago. But, yeah, it's
– you can't do an onside kick with guys standing 5 yards apart from each other.
No, I don't know.
I don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, and then the kickoff is from your own 35, so –
but the guys are further downfield, and they're not allowed to move till the guy catches the ball. And look, I'm all right with this. This is for safety. And as long as there's an onside kick component to it, I'm all right. But you can't take away the chance that somebody, a team that's trying to make up a lot of points in the last minute of the game, they score a touchdown, now they got to go for the onside kick. What are they going to do, play rock, paper, scissors?
Yeah. It's Mickey Mouse.
He is El Hombre. Michael Bradley is with us every single Tuesday. You find him here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. You can find him on Twitter as well, at Daily Hombre. At Daily Hombre on Twitter. By the way, are those interactions still going well?
Oh, yes, very good. I love it. As I say, I got more followers from people in Seattle than I do around here. Like the prophet who doesn't get listened to in his own hometown.
That's right. There's an appreciation for you out here in Seattle. They love you.
Yeah, I'm something that they're not used to.
Yeah, that's right. That's
I'm
right.
I'm always angry. Getting venom at all times.
Yeah, always angry. They
people
love it.
People can get that on every street corner in Philadelphia.
Yeah, you're just run of the mill out there. You stand out here.
What do you want?
We like our guests angry.
Michael, great stuff. We appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
162-0, suckers.
See how long that sign lasts for him and the Phillies. If they get rained out, I guess he'll have that sign for at least one more night. All right, coming up, which rule change will have the biggest impact on the NFL season coming up? We'll talk about that coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Our thanks to Michael Bradley, El Hombre, who joined us in the previous segment. In case you guys missed that conversation, you can find it on the podcast page at seattlesports.com. And make sure you click subscribe. Right, Matt?
You want to push subscribe button.
Push subscribe. That's right. That's right. That's the key to the whole thing right there. Meanwhile,
I don't think Dave likes this joke anymore.
That's okay. He'll be all right.
I'm kind of like Divish with the 54%.
Yeah?
Yeah. 100% of the time, the push thing is not that funny.
That's okay.
Oh, did you see today? Divish is already sick of every Mariners fan.
Oh, really?
Because he started, so Julio hit that home run, and he tweeted out, Julio goes down, and then describes, like, Julio goes down to go get that home run. So everyone's ripping him for saying, why did you say Julio goes down? And go look at his mentions, and he's not having a good time.
They couldn't read the whole thing. They were short.
And that's his
span.
Point, yeah. So then it's devolved into chaos.
Stecker showed me that. He did go get that one.
Yeah.
It wasn't a strike.
No. He kind of golfed it out of there. Yeah. Kind of an abbreviated follow-through, which I started cheering right away and then remembered that this is a spring training game, even though it is at Petco Park. But, yeah, Divish's hate of people I find wildly entertaining, and that will never not be funny to me, much like push. Look at Matt. See, if Matt laughs, that makes me laugh. Meanwhile, we've talked a lot about the rule changes. In terms of the actual impact on the game, which do you think has the biggest impact? Now, the two games on Christmas, zero. That has no impact. Kickoff rules certainly could. I feel like the kickoff rules, though, I need to see it. It's one of the, like the hip drop, I've got a very definitive opinion. I'm very passionate about it like you are. The kickoff sounds goofy when we explain it. I just need to see it. I wasn't watching the XFL. I don't have that visual in my mind of, oh, well, that's how it looked when they did it. I wasn't paying attention to them.
Well, you know, and I think what they're trying to do, at least their intention, is to restore that play, that make it a big deal again. And they're thinking, okay, if we do it this way with the kicker way back there, you know, I think the element of, you know, cutting down on injuries is palpable to me. Okay, you line up 5 yards, you know, apart from each other. And we were talking about the offensive players on the receiving team. I don't know who brought this up. I think it was Brent Stecker or somebody. Like, they're looking back, right?
No, it was me.
Oh, that was you. Yeah. Okay, yeah. They're looking back, and so, right, that's... So they're going to have to turn around. I guess the guy will be at like 4 yards.
You'll get at least a step on you, right?
Yeah. So, and then, you know, there's still an element of the onside kick, but, you know, you got five guys on each side, and you got guys 5 yards apart. It's not very likely.
Well, how would that work, though? Because the kicker is going to be on 35.
Yeah.
The guys will be on the opponent's 45.
That I don't know.
So the ball has to travel 10 yards. It still will have not reached the guys in front of him.
Right.
With their back to him. So I don't understand how an onside kick would work.
That was my question, too, is like where, and I haven't been able to find it, but where the kicker's going to line up, because you're not going to make it go 10 yards from where you're kicking the ball.
Because it still won't reach all of the bodies up there to field the ball.
The other side of the field.
The kicker will field his own onside kick, I guess is how that will go.
To me, I'm okay with this. I wish for onside kick they would just go back to a traditional back where you are. You can overload it just because it's a desperation play, and if you get it, it's so unlikely. And if you do show that highlight, everybody's going to be watching it, especially if the team that gets it, you know, is able to go down and score. So I wish they would restore that to the old-fashioned way, just because.
So to help at least with some clarification, the onside kick is normal in terms of alignment and format.
So they won't.
They go back to 10 yards apart.
Yeah, because it's only 10 yards apart. So you're in your same, like, whatever, on your own 40.
So the kicker won't be behind his guys way it will be for the other
kicker.
You'll
just be like a normal onside kick. Okay. Like, get your own 35 or 40 or whatever.
And then go 10 yards.
Yeah. Now, what they've done, which is unfortunate, they've eliminated the surprise onside kick because of this new kickoff rule.
You wouldn't be able to kick it off then. You'd have to commit to an onside kick at that point.
So you have to declare it. So you have to say, I'm going to do an onside kick. And
everybody
then
knows
up.
It's coming. Okay, yeah. That's what I thought. And then, so it has to go 10 yards. And then, the no surprise onside kick. I don't know.
Is anybody surprised at this point? I mean, there have been moments. I think, wasn't Sean Payton the author of some surprise onside kicks?
But I think I read somewhere there was two last
year. Yeah, but for the most part,
it's not.
They got the hands team out there. They know it's coming. There's no real secret to it. So I'm happy they're not eliminating the kickoff.
You're right.
I'm interested to see what this looks like. Does it look hokey or does it look like, okay, I get this. This works. I'm leaving it totally. I'm totally open to accepting it and celebrating the majesty of it if it's great. I don't have a hardcore opinion on it yet because I have to see it. The hip drop is lame. I don't care what anybody. And by the way, I've seen and read very few that are in support of it that have played. Certainly, you know, we're hearing from the league and they support it and certain GMs may support it. But in terms of like active players or former players, the only two I can think of is Sean Merriman and our very own Michael Bumpus.
Yeah.
In terms of players. I'm sure there are more. I'm sure I can't see every tweet or hear every remark, but I sent you the story last night that had just a page full of responses from players ripping the rule. I've seen a ton of that, heard a ton of it. I haven't seen much in the way of support from players.
Mm-hmm. Me neither. And I think everybody kind of sees the same thing. And if they've thought about it for this long, shouldn't they have an answer of what you should do in those situations?
Not that, Dave.
All they have is not that. That is ridiculous. The NFL, look, I admire, there's lots of smart people, really, and obviously they've produced, right? I mean, everything is big. Everything they touch is gold. It's fantastic. But this one, it's shocking to me, that part of it. But I think the kickoff return, at least that was, they didn't talk so much about injuries. They talked more about, hey, can we make this play exciting again?
Yeah.
And I think that's what their intention is there. Because otherwise, it's just kind of perfunctory. You go through it and like, okay, it's kickoff, run down. It's going to go in the end zone, you know, or he's going to fair catch it. And it's just kind of boring. It's something that doesn't even need to be done.
The one I do like that I'm excited for is the roughing the passer and intentional grounding can now be challenged and reviewed if there's clear evidence of a missed call. So, you know, not the grounding, I'm not as much on that. The roughing the passer, I think, has been problematic for years, you know, where we're looking at certain plays where you're going, that is an absolute example that I would have, if I were a head coach, I would have told my film guy, like, cut that play. I want to show that in the meeting. This is how you do it. But then there's a flag, and you're going, how does that make sense? He didn't fall on him. He didn't hit him with his head. He didn't drive him into the ground, yet somehow, some way, there was a flag thrown, and we talked about the notorious one between the Vikings and Packers, and it cost the Packers the game, and it seemed to me to be absolutely perfect. So I love the idea that a coach can now challenge that.
Yeah, I agree, and it's as equally outrageous as the hip drop tackle, and you know you can see that. Yeah, I love that that's going to be reviewed, and I'm just curious how many are going to get overturned. I mean, it's just the whole thing about, and I like to think that the NFL is really, really smart, that they're trying to protect certain players. You know, they're protecting the offensive guys and the quarterbacks, certainly. But, yeah, I like that it's – because I think for most people they want justice. They want it to be right. Even if it – you know, if you clearly see that the team you're rooting against, the guy's foot was in, you kind of want him to have it.
Yeah,
right?
Get it right. I don't want to – yeah, I don't want to win because this guy was inept.
Right.
He didn't do it. He made the wrong call.
It's an ill-gotten gain, Bob.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take the win, but I'd feel better about them. Like, no, I don't want the other team to have an excuse. Like,
right.
Look, here's clear evidence. His foot was out, and the guy screwed the call up. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, well, yeah, but my team won.
Yeah.
No, I want to be able to go, no, see, they reviewed it. Look at where his foot is.
I think most people feel that way. And, yeah, so, yeah, trying to get it right and reviewing it. Again, I don't think that there's ever been a football game that anyone was like, oh man, I wish this would hurry up and get over with. It just seems like if you're a football fan, I'm trying to draw a parallel to JP's.
You want more waiting?
Leave and want more waiting? I think with football, you do.
You want more waiting,
please.
I wish
there had been more waiting.
All right, coming up, spring training is over. So how do we feel about this Mariner team heading into opening day? We'll get into some of that coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Spring training is over, everybody. It is all done. The regular season starts Thursday. Thursday. Cannot wait. By the way, we will be at Hatback Bar and Grill doing our show from there. So stop by. We'll be there from 2 to 6 p.m. carrying the festivities as we do each and every year. We should have some good guests out there. We'll see what the weather's like. We could be, not
ooh,
sure. If we're going by the forecast as it sits right now, we'll be inside.
Yeah.
Because it says a high of 53 with like 85% chance of rain or something like that.
And this is at Hatback.
Yeah.
Otherwise would be at Edgar's under the closed roof. So.
Yeah, we'll be at Edgar's on Friday. So, yeah, two opportunities. Come hang out with us opening day. Join us at Hatback Bar and Grill. We'll be there again from 2 to 6 p.m., and they're going to have food trucks there. I think it starts 3 hours before the first pitch. They'll have food trucks. Let's see. Yeah, those begin 3 hours before. Food trucks, tailgating games, music, and all kinds of stuff. So go to hatback.com for more info on that. And then, yes, Friday we will be at Edgar's Cantina, which is back to the old way. Back to what we were doing before, every Friday home game, be broadcasting from there, which is always fun. But spring training is done. How do you feel now that it's all in the books? We saw everything we need to see. The team is what the team is as we sit right now. Now, we'll certainly some injuries to think about. Brian Wu will not be there to start the season. You'll get Emerson Hancock in that number five spot in the rotation to begin the year. But you feeling confident? You feeling like playoffs are bust?
The only thing that bothers me are the bullpen arms and that not working out, that you've got a few guys and then Wu going on the, is it 15-day IL? Yeah, those are the things that really bother me. But, man, I feel like you answered a lot of questions. Like, did Ty France going in to spring, did he improve? Did he get back to where he is? He had the second most at-bats of anybody on the team, and he batted .324.
What was his on base?
On base was 400.
That's good.
Very good. Very good. So, you know, he went and got fixed, supposedly, at Driveline. I don't want to say that cynically. It tends to fix people.
He was broken. They fixed him.
Yeah. Well, and look, it's just spring training, but still. The guy with the third most at bats, Dominic Canzone. And, you know, he batted .281. So, and his on base percentage was .333. And he looked really good in the field. I mean, much improved anyway. So I feel really good about that. The only thing really I don't feel great about is third base still. But even for Urias, he didn't have a bad, not a bad camp. I mean, he was 290, 303 average and on-base percentage. So, yeah, I mean, we'll take that. And hopefully this translates over to the regular season. But I thought you got some questions answered. And to me, the two biggest ones are France and Canzone.
Yeah, and you throw in the other new additions and seeing Mitch Haniger do what he did, he certainly gave you a reason for optimism. It just reminded you of what he is when he's healthy.
Man.
He's just he's a very good baseball player. He just is a very good baseball player when he's healthy. That's the caveat with him. There's no why, I wonder what he would do if he had a full season. We've seen it. 39 home runs, 100 runs driven in. He's that kind of guy. So hopefully he can stay healthy. I liked what I saw out of Polanco. I love that pickup. Another guy you're throwing the injury thing. Please stay healthy.
Yeah.
Luke Rayleigh starting to find it toward the end. That was good to see. Mitch Garver driving in a bunch of runs. That's what you want. He's your DH. So the new pickups I'm excited to see. Excited to see how they contribute to this lineup. And certainly just the progression of Julio, who's still just turned 23 years old at the end of December. He's still just a kid. And everybody is predicting him to be in the MVP conversation. So there's a reason for optimism. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it. It's not the Kool-Aid. It's not that we're given talking points from the team. No, say what we want. Say what we believe. I believe there's a reason for optimism, but there's certainly a reason for concern when it comes to the availability of everybody. The Athletic put out their 2024 power rankings. They've got the Mariners at number 7. How about that?
Yeah.
Number 7.
This is everything, not just rotation, just lineup, not just bullpen.
Yeah, just full team, and their little blurb, their paragraph they wrote, the odds of reaching the postseason might be 60.2%, but the odds that Mariner fans will continue to grumble that the team should have done more to improve the lineup are roughly 99.9%. They're right, you know, is what they say. The Mariners have one of the best starting rotations in the game, if not the best, but they're going with a gaggle of 730 OPS guys and hoping a couple of them can be 830 OPS guys. The rotation is high floor, high ceiling, and the lineup is low floor, low ceiling, and Julio Rodriguez. Seems like a missed opportunity considering that the rotations like this don't come around every decade. So they are celebrating what they think could be the best rotation in all of baseball with a gaggle of 730 OPS guys that they're hoping to pop. So they're a little less optimistic about the offense.
Yeah, well, they like our rotation.
yeah. Well, they've got them number 7. I mean, and the three AL teams are in front of them in their power rankings. That would be the Astros, the Orioles, and the Rays.
Do you feel like it's a foregone conclusion that Julio Rodriguez has just his absolute best year? And I feel like that's just going to happen. I feel like I've been counting on that, I guess, is the way I should put it, is that that's fully worked into how the Mariner season goes this year. And I don't think, I mean, the way you mentioned it yesterday, the way you paid this guy, that's exactly what you're looking for from him.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable expectation that his year is better than the previous two. I think, is it mandatory he's an MVP candidate? No, but if he's progressing each year, if he's better, I mean, technically, you look at his numbers, he was better than he was his rookie year. Now, he did a lot of damage in a 5-week span. He had some dead spots last year, certainly. But this year, I expect to be better than his previous two. And I expect that to be true next year and that to continue for years to come. He's that young. He's still he's so fresh in his career that I feel like that's a reasonable expectation. Not that he's an MVP every year. Just continue to get better and do more damage and be more of that threat.
And that's who you should be based on how you're paid and everything. Boy, you were talking about Mitch Haniger and couldn't have looked better. It just seemed like every time I saw a highlight of him or I was watching him, he's getting a hit or hitting a home run, which he had 4 of. But, you know, he had one of the more, you know, he had 28 at-bats, so that he got plenty of opportunities. He was 464, 500, 6 RBIs. I mean, he has just been like a dream. And again, I don't feel like that's a guy that needs to get shut down and, you know, everybody to be careful with. If he can just stay away from the injuries, the freak accidents is what I should call them, It's going to be a really good pickup by Mitch Haniger, and you could tell how much everybody around there, especially JP, talked about the importance of his presence.
Yeah, we talked about Robbie Ray, how everybody loved him in that clubhouse, really did, and Mitch is a guy like that too. I think this is a great reunion. I think it's just a breath of fresh air for him and the club. You know, he had a year away to really appreciate what he had here and his teammates here. Not that he didn't like his guys in San Francisco, but the season didn't go the way he hoped. He played 61 games. So
he likes these guys better.
Yeah.
I can tell.
Well, probably because they're better guys. I mean, they're wearing Mariner uniforms, Dave. Yes. What do you expect?
Exactly.
All right, everybody, that does it for us. I want to thank our guest today, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, who joined us on the program. If you missed any part of that conversation or any part of the show, you know where it's at. SeattleSports.com. Just click the podcast tab, click on our picture, and it's right there waiting for you. Like a big prize every single day. And you can click subscribe and it'll be there automatically. You won't ever have to do anything other than hit play after that. So click subscribe. Have a great night, everybody. We're back tomorrow with Wyman and Bob right here, Seattle Sports on 710.